Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot, oh my, it's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Here are your supernatural hosts, Patricia Baker and Becky Andreasen. Supernatural Girls.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Supernatural Girls Radio. I am your host, Patricia Baker, and I am here with my terrific co-host, Becky Andreasen. How are you, Becky?
Good. How are you? And hi to everyone. I'm excited about the show.
I'm hearing an echo, unfortunately. Are you hearing one also?
No, I am not.
Okay, I'm hoping it's only me. If it continues, we'll have to have Blog Talk come in and do their reset.
Oh, gracious. Oh, no.
Bear with us, everybody, though, because we have a fantastic show tonight. We have Clifford Stone. He is a former Army sergeant, and he's going to be talking to us about all kinds of secret goings-on with ETs, time travel, and UFOs. So if you have a question for Cliff, then be sure to call in to 646-478-0828. And we're going to bring him on in just a few minutes, but I am going to have to contact our, unfortunately, I'm going to ask Becky, our screener. Becky, would you please contact Blog Talk and tell them that we're having a problem again and ask them to come on with us and see if we can get this fixed so we don't drive everybody crazy. So Becky, our fabulous co-host, and we have Becky, our call screener. So Becky, our call screener, if you could get a hold of Blog Talk, let's see if we can get this fixed. So in the meantime, I'm just going to go ahead with some of our announcements. Please go to our SupernaturalGirls.com website. That's SupernaturalGirls with a Z. And subscribe to our newsletter so that you can get all the latest show information, discounts on products, and take a look at our store. We've got some cool stuff in there. Things to light your way. And Power Preppers, I promise, this week is coming back. Now, you know what happened last week, Becky. We had a great show lined up with Steve Minguez. He's going to tell us how to survive a carjacking, which, you know, that's been in the news lately. Some really horrible things have been going on.
I know.
And so, it's been terrible. So we really want to be able to give people that information. And poor Steve was in and out of the hospital all week last week. And he's finally free of whatever he was dealing with. And this week he promised me he's coming on the show. And that's 5 to 6 p.m. on Thursday. We have a new time as well. So
Fantastic, because we needed to know.
I wouldn't know what to do.
Me neither. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a surprise type thing. So to know what to do would be wonderful.
It would be great.
It would be great.
So that's why we have planned the show, and I actually didn't want to even schedule something else because I wanted people to be able to hear all the great information that he has to offer.
So yes, life-saving.
Yeah, we'll be back on the air for Thursday. And if you can't make the show or any of our shows live, then you can certainly listen to them archived because all of our shows are archived, and you can go to the website and download them, listen to them at your convenience.
That's great. I listen to them myself. You know, if I miss something, it's, you know, because we're talking. So if I miss something, it's like, what did I miss? And I have to go back, and I enjoy it so much.
Oh, see? So yeah, that's,
even though
that's
the
really good.
Says
everybody
too.
Has that opportunity to just listen anytime to an archive show. And the other thing is you have a message from the elders, and that happens every single week, so you're going to deliver that at the end of the show, right?
Yes, I do. I have my message ready for a person out there. Yes.
Oh, terrific. So we will be hearing that at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that, everybody. And we are also offering a new class, Becky and I, via teleconference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be four sessions, and it's going to be about dreaming prosperity. So how to create prosperity in your life, we're going to be using a lot of tools, including dreams, and that's beginning on January 28th. And we're only taking four participants.
Right.
So if this is something you're interested in, there's a very small, intimate group with a lot of personal attention. And so make sure that if you're interested, send us an email, and we will reserve your spot.
That's right.
Yes. So
let's
see what's going on here. I see we have lost our call screener.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
And so let's see if we can get...
there she is.
Yes, she needs the PIN number. How crazy is this? Because I want to bring Clifford on, but I don't want to subject him to this ridiculous echo either.
Echoing, yes. That's strange.
I know it. So let me give, why don't you talk a little bit about, now I know there's a picture somewhere in the archives of you with Clifford.
Yes, there is. Long time ago, I was off on a lecture with my parents, and we met Clifford, and it was really exciting, and my stepdad, Bob, was reminding me the other day, and he has the picture, and he was saying, do you want to put it up? And I'm like, oh, geez, you know, I don't look anything like that anymore. I don't know if I want to put it up. You know,
oh.
It's like, there you go. There's my vanity. Uh-oh, it's slipping out. So... anyway, I said, well, maybe not right now, but I'd love to see Clifford again. So I went up online and watched some YouTube. It was wonderful, and he is a wonderful man. I remember meeting him in such kindness and, you know, spoke outright to people and so helpful in letting information out and people asking questions. I remember such kindness in him when we spoke. So, you know, you meet people from your past, and there's certain people that really do stick with you, and Clifford was one that stuck with me.
Oh, and here we are. We're going to be talking with him in just a few minutes.
I know.
Coming full circle with all of this, which is so exciting.
Yes, I am very excited.
Oh, good. Well, you know what I'm going to do while we're waiting for Blog Talk to reset the show? I'm going to go ahead with our paranormal news.
Sure. That sounds great.
All right. And the reason that this isn't really quite paranormal news, but it's a good lead-in to our conversation with Clifford tonight, because it's all about how a reporter, a Washington reporter requested to the Navy to turn over documents related to the Navy Yard shooting, terrible tragedy. And he had sent information request under the Freedom of Information Act. And what happened was somebody made a mistake. And what they did was, instead of sending him a response to his request, they sent him basically this manifest of how to avoid Freedom of Information request.
Oh, my goodness, huh? Look at that. Somebody wasn't doing their job right.
No. So instead of sending him the relevant documents, they inadvertently sent an internal email containing instructions on how to avoid the reporter's request.
Oh, my. Oh. That must have been a great report.
Well, that all went viral because this reporter took a screenshot of it and just sent it around. And The next response from the Navy was quite interesting. It said they regretted the content of an internal email sent to NBC Washington, and they were, of course, committed to transparency and responding to Freedom of Information Act requests in a timely and professional manner.
Wow.
If that doesn't say it all, now you know how many times your stepdad, Bob, has done Freedom of Information requests to try to get the truth out there.
Yes, that's right.
And he has been stonewalled lots of times. And
this is why.
This is why. And it says, well, I guess this transparency thing is just words.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. You know, they send it out. They got caught. And
they sure did.
Then they covered that up. And they're still doing it. I mean, it's like, really?
Yeah, really. It's right. So I think it's, let's see if they're going to reset the show for us right before we bring Clifford on. I'm just going to ask, are they resetting us? Sorry about this, everybody. But this is an ongoing problem we've had. And it's very, very upsetting.
You want everyone to hear clearly and not be having an echo. Yes.
So let's see.
Especially our guest.
Yes.
Yes.
Not fair to just subject everybody to a bad audio.
And it's strange because I don't hear it over here on when you're speaking to me, and you know, I don't. Am I echoing? Or just you?
No, it's just me.
You. Okay.
And I'm on a landline. And I, again, just so everybody knows, this, again, has been an ongoing issue where everybody's on a landline. This shouldn't be happening. And Blog Talk keeps reassuring us it shouldn't be happening, and it continues to happen. So
well, it's kind of good they know now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We even brought experts in from VoIP and everybody else, and they say it's not us.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, let's see what happens.
We are going to be reset.
And let's see.
Resetting.
Now, everybody's listening, all that means is that we are going to be going off the air for a minute, and we're going to come right back, and the show music will start, and we're just going to come right back on the air and introduce our guest.
Right.
So, Cliff, I know you're listening, and as soon as we get reset, please just call right back in. So that is what we're going to do, everybody. Please call back if you're listening via phone or log back into the chat room. And we will see what we can do to make this a better show for everybody.
Yes.
So we're all going to hang up now and then call back in.
Okay, stay with us, with everyone.
Welcome back, everybody. We are
live
on the air. Is the echo gone?
I still don't hear an echo, so I guess
I don't hear one. I think we're good. And we are going to bring Clifford Stone finally live on the air. So let's welcome our guest. Clifford, welcome to Supernatural Girls.
Welcome.
Clifford? Oh, wait a second. I think we had him leave on one line, and he called back on another. So let me find him.
Okay.
Clifford, you're live on the air.
Thank you, ma'am.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
We're so excited to have you on tonight.
Thank you.
And sorry for the trouble. Like I mentioned, this has been an ongoing issue with Blog Talk, and I wonder if it's the extraterrestrials that just love our show so much.
Yeah. That could be.
They keep opening up our lines a little too much.
At the risk of sounding paranoid, I would put the blame on the government. They like to listen to things that they're paranoid about themselves.
Really?
Oh.
See,
so
how about that one?
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't doubt that one single bit.
Gosh.
Normally much more professional at it, but...
Well, I got to tell you something. Actually, this didn't start until I joined Patricia and started co-hosting. Right, Patricia?
That's true. We had never had this problem before.
Right. And I know the government has been watching me, you know, most of my life. So I wonder. I think Cliff hit the nail on the head.
I agree.
Yes. Well, please, Mr. Government up there, whoever is doing it, stop doing that to us.
Yeah, we don't like it. Interrupts our
no.
flow. We have a flow
Becky,
here.
Becky, you
yes.
have to understand, the whole situation is that, like, when the government needs people to interface with our visitors, they have no school for this. They have to find people in the civilian sector and bring them in to utilize them.
Oh, my goodness. So that means that I've been with them all my life. So when the time comes and they really need the interaction with these different beings, they're going to come looking for us that they know have had lifetime experiences with them?
I was medically rejected from military service.
Right.
But then I was called back because they had the draft back in the time when I came in.
Right.
And I really wanted to serve my country. So I went ahead and I went. And, of course, the draft board sent me greetings and salutations from your friends and neighbors. You have to report to the Armed Forces Induction Center for reexamination.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. And then I was given the opportunity to come in to the military, which I immediately took.
Oh.
But I didn't have a choice what I wanted to go into. I was told, you have to be a clerk. So I really wanted to go into the Army Aviation Program. But that would require another physical, and they'd find the medical problems, and that could create problems. So, no, I had to be a clerk. So I went ahead and decided, well, I get in, so once I have my foot in the door, I can move on from there. Well, I moved on. And
you sure did.
I took law enforcement training, things of this sort, NBC training, but I remained a clerk. And that right there made it a whole lot easier for them to use me. The only problem is that my family knew clerks didn't do like what I was doing, the late hours, the long hours, even
right.
to the point with in my military career, I actually lost 3 months of leave time because I couldn't take leave.
Wow.
In an 8-year period, there were 3 years out of the 8 years I could not take no leave.
So you just
so
worked all the way through 365
right.
days a year.
Well, absolutely. And something that my kids haven't forgiven me for to this day.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
How
well,
sad. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well,
so start, can you tell us, Clifford, how, because you have a long history with this, not just in the armed forces, but also just in your life in general.
Well, yes, that's what, you know, having experiences as a kid. And what I was seeing was, to me, they were children, and that's the way they looked to me. The one problem I had, I couldn't understand why other people couldn't see them, but I was warned by them that you're the only one who can see us, so don't mention us around your other friends. And I got real astute to the fact that they couldn't see them. But when I first saw the one that chose me, that decided that was the contact that was going to follow me throughout my life, because they learn about us, our social interactions, our cultures, by picking someone at a young age and following them throughout their lifetime. They don't interfere with our life per se, but they follow us. And from our interaction with the world in our little corner, they group all this together, and they have an understanding of us as a species.
But what was the reason, though, for this? In other words, they chose you You know, people question, is this because of your family line? Is this because of DNA? Is it a spiritual reason? You know, that's a question that's always asked. Do you know why they chose you?
First, I have to caution everyone. There's rogue elements out there, which we call the bad ones. But
right.
As far as their societies go, their cultures, they're very spiritually elevated.
Mm-hmm.
And why they chose me, I have no idea.
Okay.
And why they choose others, I have no idea.
Okay.
But they make the choices. A lot of people say, show me how to contact these entities.
Right.
They're not here to put on a show.
Oh,
and
absolutely. That is right.
It's just like a lot of people, when you ask them, who put the first, who got the first missile to the moon? And a lot of people say, well, it was the United States in 1969. No, we got the first man there and back. The Russians got the first missile to the moon. They made the first landing on the moon in 58. And that is documented history. But from the onset of our program of going out into space, first Sputnik, it became dead reckoning. We had to know what was out there. Much to our surprise, when we set up what we called the satellite fence, where we had radar that was starting to track the satellites out there, both the ones that were sending back signals and what we called dark satellites, where there was no signals being transmitted back that we could pick up on, that had a hidden signal like was going to the former Soviet states. We picked up something else. We picked up UFOs. Eventually they called them unidentified bodies. Today we use the term fast walkers, but not all fast walkers are UFOs. And the objects we're picking up, the scientific community will refer to them as potential extraterrestrial artifacts. In short, they were probes that were there a long time ago that was watching us from afar. But when we entered into the nuclear age, they started to watch us more close up. That's when we started to have much more visitation taking place, and that's when the stories of the UFOs started to break in the news. Now, all throughout our history, they have been here. But we became dangerous right after the Second World War. And as we progress and get closer to becoming interstellar travelers, they'll make the determination as to whether they let us go out beyond our solar system. And how we spiritually grow is a key factor in that.
Absolutely. A huge key factor in that. And like you said, there are bad, evil ones and good ones out there also. So the spiritual factor right there is again, like night and day. And humans dwelling or dealing with evil ones or good ones out there. So that is something, a question of, too. I know that you have dealt with, I think you said, 7 different beings, or seen them, and dealt with the beings. And there's, you had seen somewhere, I think you said 57?
When I got out, we had cataloged 57 different species.
And what year was that by then?
It was in 1990-91 when I got out of the service. By that time, we had cataloged 57.
Okay, all here on Earth.
That have visited Earth on an ongoing basis.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that's all there is. It means that's what we have been able to catalog to where we have some knowledge and information on.
Okay. And out of that, how many are good or bad? Would you have any idea?
All of them would be good, except for it's about like, you know, trying to say all Mexicans are bad. Well, no, that's not true.
Right.
You have the cartel, and the cartel is a misfit as far as the social order of Mexico goes. But the Mexican
right.
cartel...
Right, I understand that, totally. I mean, just because it's one form of a ET race, it doesn't mean they're all good. I know there can be rogues or there can be bad within it, just like any race, no matter what race it is. I understand this. And but I was just wondering, there's some races in the ET realm that are more detrimental to humanity than others. That's what I was asking.
Absolutely. And these would be the one that would view the Earth at, in accordance with the zoo process, or the zoo hypothesis.
I see.
They would be the abnormal entities from their own civilization. And these would be the ones that would be working with the government.
Oh, my goodness. That is not good.
No, that's not good at all.
No, the bad guys are working with the government. That is bad,
but it does explain
bad
a lot,
news.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But my goodness. So, Clifford, you've actually been up close and personal, when you were a child, definitely had, it sounds like you and Becky had very similar experiences. And then when you were in the military, now you had, 22 years of being involved with this, but you were also a part of an extremely elite group that was dispatched to crash sites to recover UFO
right.
pieces, UFO crafts, and bodies.
Well, correct.
So you've actually seen this, and I want to know, what have you seen?
Yeah.
A whole lot. And the problem is that it's a hard story to tell, and the reason it's a hard story to tell, it's about like asking a war vet to tell what they did during the war. Like, one of the things that puts me in a weird situation is when, and I don't want to go into this, but when somebody comes up and asks, how many people did you kill in the Vietnam War? You got your nightmares to remind you of that. You know what I'm saying? But we also recognize that as something that we can treat as post-traumatic stress syndrome. When it comes to the activities that you were involved in with actually seeing the craft and even seeing dead and living aliens, then that becomes a situation where when you have post-traumatic stress syndrome over that, who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? There's no one.
Right.
And you have to learn to deal with that. And actually, that's what made me start to come out and talk about what really was going on, because I got to the point where I felt we have no right doing this, that we need to stop saying that people are crazy and start recognizing the facts that things were going on. And working with inside the government to where we were doing these things, doing it because they needed you, not because you needed them. The reason they need you is because when we recover alien hardware, we can't back engineer the whole craft, but we can back engineer bits and pieces, and we have done this. That's what gave us the quantum leap from the 40s to present, and a lot of the scientific knowledge we currently have and a lot of the capabilities we currently have. It's like we can colonize the moon, we can colonize Mars. What stops us is lack of funds. But at the same time, the species, the societies that are visiting us, they really don't want to go ahead and give us this technology because they view it on par as giving a six-year-old child a loaded weapon, a loaded gun, and say, here, go out and have fun and play. We wouldn't dream of doing that because that child has no idea what the capability of that firearm is. it's not a toy.
Right.
Well, what they have is technology that we would use in the wrong way. And they realize this. When I helped the one escape there at Fort Belvoir, that E.T. was not being cooperative. And they felt that if I went ahead, that I could talk with it. But and I bet Becky can even identify with this. When you got that psychic connection with a visitor.
Yes.
You get to go ahead and you're picking up everything that that entity is thinking, and that entity is picking up everything that you are thinking.
And feeling.
Oh, you feel it. You,
yes.
I mean, when I felt the fear
yeah.
that this alien had, and when I did that, I figured I'd
like,
be shot. I was waiting for the guards because, you know, after we got out to the back and we got it out through the storm fence, they were yelling, halt, halt, halt. And I was waiting because I was figuring what I was doing was going to get me shot.
Mm.
But no one did shoot. And the guy that I always called the colonel, the guy that was always in civilian clothes, that always was in control, he went ahead and told me all the bad things that could happen to me. And, of course, I related to him. You said it was our guest. Since when do we keep guests under armed guard? But I assure you, those soldiers, that was their first and only incident. So here you had 20 or more soldiers that were involved in an incident of high strangeness, that everything they believed up to the point they were involved in that particular incident changed forever. But, you know, you have people in the military that have been used in one incident. Then these people have to deal with it on their own. But as Becky knows, when you have a incident of this type, where you come face to face with entities not of this world, that it affects you for the rest of your life.
Oh, yes,
and unless
it changes.
You have an, that's it. And unless you have an outlet to,
right.
with people you can talk to who have shared the very same experiences, it's very difficult for you to deal with that.
Right,
and
even
I made
to understand.
When
yeah.
I made
true.
The decision
you know,
to come out to talk,
we,
that
yeah.
was
we
the
also,
basis
we,
of it.
We, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is how it shatters your reality as you know it when you have these experiences. And we did have a guest on the show some time back. And I'm not going to say who it was, but after the show we had a conversation like this. And he was also involved in some way with a captured extraterrestrial at a base. And he ended up being so traumatized by the experience that he couldn't remember it. And he was actually asking us if we would help him to retrieve that memory. And it was, I mean, again, a lot of people don't understand, well, what could be so startling, shocking, unnerving about this, you know, after all we've seen, heard, and read, the body of evidence is so overwhelming. Of course, we know that they're real. But, you know, again, there's maybe you could talk a little bit more about that, about the impact that had on you when you saw for the first time life from another planet here on this planet.
Well, it goes back to when I was about 6 years old. Up to that time, I was seeing, you know, these people as children. Then one day, I found a little bird that fell out of the tree, and I felt badly for it, so I picked it up, and I wanted to try to cure it. It broke its beak, and it was bleeding, so I took it home. I held it under the faucet, which drowned the bird. And to a child of 6 years old, I felt like I was a murderer. I killed a living creature. And, you know, I was brokenhearted, and I was crying over that little bird. I took its life. Then the one that I Corona. That's the name of the entity that stays with me. And people say, why did he choose such a well-known name? Well, he made it clear it's Corona with a K. I have no idea why it's that away. But immediately when I saw him, he was asking me, why are you feeling the way you feel? Why is water coming out of your eyes? Why do I feel what you're feeling right now? Why do we feel this way? And I was scared. I'll tell you right now, I was scared. I ran. I tried to hide. I remember running, hiding behind the sofa. And it was like I could feel like the like bony hands scratching me on top of the head. Then I ran and I hid behind a space between the kitchen sink and the refrigerator. And again, it was, I felt it. My mom was in the hospital at this time, and my Aunt Wynn was taking care of me. Well, she thought that I was being, you know, throwing a tantrum for some reason. So she set me in a chair, and I refused to sit there. I had to get up. I had to go try to find a place to hide. And eventually I realized I couldn't. And, of course, now I was seeing Corona as the little boy I knew him as. But I knew that that wasn't him. I knew what he was now. And it took several months before I could regain my composure and accept that something was going on in my life that I didn't understand.
And
but
I think, too, Clifford, for you and also for Becky, there's a big difference when you have these experiences as a child versus when you're confronted with this for the first time when you're an adult.
Oh, yes.
I think it's a lot more shocking, a lot more hard to deal with when you're an adult seeing this for the first time. Certainly it's hard enough as a child, but I think there's a little more flexibility there with children and malleability with children, would you say, than when an adult is confronted? Like you talk about the men, the troops that were screaming halt at you, and I'm sure they didn't know what to think of any of this and probably never integrated the experience. Whereas children do have that ability and that time to do it if they so desire.
Absolutely. But the situation is that with people that are older, in their 20s, 30s, this has a very, at times, detrimental effect, because there are people that are out there who have had experiences that have wound up taking their lives, that have lost their families, that have lost their jobs, and essentially isolated themselves from society because they know that something went on in their lives that they don't know how to share. And sometimes us in the UFO field become our own worst enemies when we got people in high places that are willing to share and to talk about what they know. Because this is very, very important for them to come out in an authoritative manner and talk. But back in when I first got involved and speaking out, I had people that I trusted in the UFO field that turned out not really being serious about the problem. It was like a show to them, if you understand what I'm saying. That's not everybody in the field. Please don't get me mistaken in that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the book that I have out right now, thank God for Paula Harris, because she's the one that was the moving force to get that book out. I started writing the book in 1995 about my experiences just before the death of my son.
Mm.
And after that, I put it away. And it wasn't just until a couple months ago I found the manuscript. But I'm glad she got the book out, because I've gotten several phone calls since that book came out, even from one person who was with me in one of the recoveries. We were inside the craft. His family never, ever believed him. They felt that it was associated with the Vietnam War, and he was getting it all mixed up. And that was a safety mechanism for him. But he said, no, this incident really happened. Somehow, some way, he found out about the book. After reading it, he got all of his family together, and he called me, and he put it on speaker. And first, I didn't know, okay, is this somebody trying to pull my leg or what? But we talked, and it became apparent he was there with me. He asked which side he was on, standing behind me. And I said, if you're who I think I am, you were standing on the right side. And he said, yes. And he went ahead and said, do you remember what I asked when you took the paper clip and stuck it in that little space and started turning it and the craft started to vibrate? And I said, yes, I remember. You said, what happens next? And he immediately responded to what I said, which isn't the norm. Because normally people be cussing, but I wasn't cussing. I went ahead and responded, I haven't a clue. Then I heard the woman in the background say, oh, my God. And that was his wife.
Yes, she knew it was real then.
Now she knew.
Yes.
But this gentleman, he doesn't want to come out and tell his story. He wants to live a normal life, but what was important, what was key to him, was his family know that their father, their husband, their grandfather wasn't crazy. This really did happen. And that right there was confirmation for them.
And people need that.
They do. They do, because I know what impact it's had on me and my family. I know what impact it has on other people. And like I say, I know of those cases. Paul Benowitz, the community messed with them, either on an official or unofficial basis. But that created problems for him. I'm sure both of you are familiar with Paul Benowitz.
Yeah, and I'm just going to take this minute, Clifford, to just take a short commercial break, because I do want you to tell the audience about Mr. Benowitz and what happened, because you were actually involved in watching being a part of the disinformation issues. And there's a lot that goes on with that, but then there was a turning point with Mr. Benowitz. And I want everybody to hear this. It's a fascinating, fascinating experience and transformation that you went through. So just everybody please stay with us. We're just going to take a short commercial break, and we will be right back.
Ready for a new experience of freedom and powerful connection? Would you like a positive, effortless change in your life? Then come to CosmicFusion.com, where we offer the most advanced energy clearing and expansion techniques in the world, with a quantum vortex energy to activate your divine blueprint and life's purpose. When your soul leads the way with cosmic fusion and quantum vortex energy, you can break clear of past difficulties and blocks with the power of the Source. With Cosmic Fusion, the Source Energy does the work for you. It's easy and effortless. Listen to our free meditation right from our Cosmic Fusion website, the Cosmic Code Meditation. Sign up for one of our interactive webinars today. Come to Cosmic Fusion, www.kosmicfusion.com, to experience an effortless awakening and transformation. Are you ready for an upgrade? Are you ready for a new experience of living in the fifth dimensional magic and powerful connection? Then visit CosmicFusion.com today. CosmicFusion.com.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic One Company. As one of the pioneers of the organic wine movement, since 1980, I have brought you the very best and most authentic organic wines directly to your table. I work with small family estates who grow certified organic grapes and produce exceptional wines. You can purchase our wines individually from our website at theorganicwinecompany.com or join one of our wine clubs. Our organic wines are perfect for you and for your family as gifts for friends and relatives, and they are simply spectacular for the holidays. Visit us at theorganicwinecompany.com to enjoy the very best organic wines conveniently delivered to your door. I am Véronique Raskin, passionate about my mission. I offer to you vegan, organic, and biodynamic wines, wines made by people of the heart, wines with a heart. Au revoir. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Your property tax bill. Have you seen it lately? It's frightening. Your property taxes are going up while your home value is going down. It's time to fight back and win. For the real truth about the property tax system, get attorney Pat Quintilian's book, Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Attorney Quintilian answers all your questions and gives you the facts you need to fight a property tax bill that is spiraling out of control. You'll also read about what happens to property owners who don't check their property records, only to find out too late they're taxed on square footage, fixtures, and even buildings that they don't own. Is this happening to you? Learn your rights. Buy Attorney Pat Quintilian's book today. Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Available on Amazon.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We are speaking with Clifford Stone. And Clifford is also the author, I want to mention this, of exceptional books. One is Eyes Only, and the other is UFOs Are Real, Extraterrestrial Encounters Documented by the U.S. Government. And these are available on Amazon.com. Is that where people can go to buy your books, Clifford?
Well, the used one, as far as UFOs Are Real, that one was done in 97. But the Eyes Only, that can be purchased at Amazon.com.
Okay, terrific. Terrific. So please tell us a little bit more. Now, I know you were going to talk about Mr. Benowitz, but before you go there, could you give us a little bit of background on exactly what does the government do when they want to discredit somebody or send out a bunch of disinformation? What's the process? How does it work?
Well, the process is essentially what they call an officially sanctioned deception program. And you only need about 5-10% of it to be true, with the rest of it being totally garbage. But you have to have that 5-10% truth in it to make it believable, and particularly to the targeted audience you want to reach. And that happens a lot within the UFO field. It's ongoing right now with many of the documents that are out there. A lot of the documents that are out there right now, not the ones that were officially released by the U.S. government, but the ones that spiritously showed up out there, the ones that someone said that they snuck it out through the guard, and I can tell you it don't work that way. I'll go so far as to say with Snowden, some of the hierarchy at the top wanted Snowden to do what he did, or he wouldn't have gotten that information out. With the sensitive compartmentalized information and special access programs, they have certain facilities for this information, and it doesn't leave without the authorization of some high top officials. So with Snowden getting everything he got out, somebody knew he was doing it at the time.
No kidding.
He did it.
Oh my goodness.
And,
yeah.
Permitted
it to happen.
What's a new
wrinkle in this?
SCI material, sensitive information material, you have it to where you have to go to a facility. It's not kept in a safe like secret or top secret material. It's at a specific facility. The NSA uses closed loop computers.
What does that mean? What's a closed loop computer? If you could explain that to me
meaning
and
that,
our audience.
With closed loop, I can't explain it fully, but what it means, you're being monitored with everything that you're looking at and working with. You can't download it unless they authorize you to download it. And it makes it much harder for a person to break in and distill that material.
Okay.
And if you download it, they know you downloaded it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they know you downloaded it, if you're going home for lunch and it's under the SCI or SAP programs, you're not going to go ahead, hide it in your pocket, put it in your mouth or anything like that and walk out with it. And with all the stuff he had to go ahead and have authorization. From the time, I can't remember the name of the family, but they were a Navy family. They got a whole lot of highly classified information. They then cracked down on that. A good example on how this information doesn't get out is from, and they'll tell you from 1962, but actually it goes all the way back to 1956 up to 1994. A little organization called the National Reconnaissance Office was a non-existent entity. No one knew anything about it. No one even knew its name. In 1994, they briefed Congress on the existence of that particular office. During the time of its existence, there was a by-name listing because it was under both those programs, the Sensitive Information, the Sensitive Compartment and Information Program, and Special Access Program. During the time of its existence, the information was not let out. When NASA needed a camera to go ahead and take photographs of the moon to try to determine the best place to land, NRO already had that camera. But now what to do? Because they couldn't tell NASA that they had it. Even from the military side of the house, they couldn't do it.
Oh, geez.
They
wow.
took an antiquated camera that was about 10 years behind its time as to what NRO had, gave it to NASA and said, this is what our research and development has come up with. Maybe you can utilize it. NASA went ahead, pumped about $90,000 into it, improved it a little, and that was the camera they used to map the moon to decide where we were going to land. NASA did not know at the time that they had, that the NRO had a better camera that could go ahead and take much better pictures. But it was so classified that at times, vice presidents of the United States were not immediately brought into the loop. The budget was classified. They'd normally have about six members of Congress who would be briefed on it, and they would be the only ones that would be cleared for Corona material or Talent Kehoe. When they were briefed on it, they went back and stated, this is a classified budget. Here's what's in it that we can tell you about. It deals with reconnaissance. But that's essentially about all we can say. But it is necessary. And it would be approved on the basis of what these particular people in Congress knew. But not all of Congress was briefed at the time. And there's a lot of times when it comes to UFOs, there are several members of Congress that know the story. Others are cut out of the loop. And these are what we call black budget projects. And the UFOs fall under black budget projects. And also they have other budgeting that, you know, it's like a black hole. No one knows where it goes to. outside of the black budget. And it sounds like I'm putting apples and oranges there, but the two entities are different. And I'm just beginning to find this out because I myself am looking for answers on...
Well, now you're talking about these secret organizations within the government that have secret budgets, and only a few people, or very few people, are in the loop and in the know with what they're really doing. So we've got that aspect of it, high-level secrecy going on, our tax dollars at work. And then we also have the government that's the parts of the government that are providing disinformation. So you're saying parts of what they're saying are true, like 5% is true, the rest of it's not true. And so that feeds the whole that UFOs aren't real situation. And then you also mentioned that the government has the ability, and has for some time, to take a person and make them think they've had a UFO experience when they really haven't.
Absolutely. It's called false memory. And it doesn't matter how smart you are, how much in control of your life you are, they can go ahead and embed these false memories. And they will make a lot of people believe they have had abduction experiences to cover up some of the real abduction experiences. And later on, these false memories will surface as false memories. And they actually tried this with Dr. Mack. But
you mean he was working with them?
What's that?
Dr. Mack was working with the government?
No. Dr. Mack was very sincere.
Okay.
But what they tried to do was go ahead and have people that would talk to him have false, they really believed it from the onset that they really had the experiences, to only try to surface them. Now, the ones that was most successful was actually outside of the intelligence community, and that organization was associated with PSYOPs. They actually planted a female in there who created a story about abductions. And when they had a hearing on it, and Dr. Mack validated her story, saying it fit everything that was being said about other abductions, which it did, because they know how the scenarios go down. She immediately went ahead and was asked by a member of the PSYOPs that was there at this gathering, were these events real? No, I made them all up. Oh, you did?
So it discredited everything. Mm-hmm.
That was the intent. But see, within the scientific community, there's never been a scientific hearing on UFOs. The Conan Committee was not a scientific investigation of UFOs. The 1995 British study wasn't a scientific study into UFOs. But I bring both these up for one reason. Both of them found things they couldn't explain.
Uh-huh.
Both of them found things that defied rational explanation, short of calling the people who made the reports liars or hoaxers, things of this sort. And they knew they couldn't do that, because it was the furthest thing from the truth, because these people had nothing to gain, and many of them were working with government agencies at the time these events took place. So what they did, it was almost like, you know, we're going to have these, you're going to find things you can't explain, but remember, UFOs don't exist, there's no visitors from outer space, and that's going to be the conclusion you come to. The Robinson panel, a CIA panel that met in January of 1953, made it clear that government should ridicule UFO reports, not go ahead and even consider them being real. In 1948, the United States Air Force, the Air Tactical Intelligence Center, at a top secret level, came up with a report that's known commonly as an estimate of the situation. It was an operational intelligence situation estimate, is what it really was. Very thick book in a black binder. And they concluded that some UFOs were interplanetary spacecraft. Mm-hmm. General Hans Vandenberg, and actually that happened in, I believe it was August of 1948, General Hans Vandenberg came in and stated that you have to have real proof. Without real proof, hard proof, we don't dare to come to that conclusion. Where's your hard proof? Some of the people, because this was outside of Blue Book, it wasn't part of Blue Book.
Okay.
It was called Project Sign at that time. Some of the people right there did the report, knew they had the physical evidence from the Roswell crash, the plains of St. Augustine, and several other areas where they recovered debris, and even had the bodies. Now, at Roswell, they didn't keep the bodies. The bodies were returned right out there at White Sands to their civilization, to their species.
They were given back.
Oh, yes, they were given back. They have respect for their dead. But all of this was information that once again fell into what existed at the time as part of their sensitive compartmented information, which means you have to be on a by-name listing and have a specific need to know to be privy to this information. Having a top-secret clearance was not enough to have exposure to this material. The ones that were involved with that estimate, some of them, not all of them, some of them knew of the physical evidence we had, but could not bring it into play because the report itself was top-secret. It did not have the caveats that made it a sensitive compartment in information document or anything like that. So Vandenberg directed, I want the report declassified and destroyed. There was no need to declassify it. All they had to do was to destroy it.
Oh, boy.
But if you just to destroy a classified document, you have a roster, a classified destructions roster, that shows the title of the report, the date it was destroyed, and you are required to keep one copy for historical references. He went ahead, ordered all copies destroyed. Well, since it was declassified, some people kept it, yet none has surfaced yet. But there were 32 copies of that report made, and at least 9 of them survived. The National Archives still has a copy of that report. It's just they don't know where to look for it, and what to look for,
so
because even Captain Ruplett called it by the wrong name in his book, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects. He called it a estimate of the situation, not by its actual title.
What a lot of people may not understand also, Clifford, is that when you do a Freedom of Information Act request, you have to be very specific. So if you don't have the right name of the report or the accurate date, then they can just dismiss it.
Yes. Well, when it comes to UFOs, what we try to do is look for any and all ways to call it a fishing expedition. And they'll send it back and say, your request is not clear and exactly what you're looking for. If you will go ahead, rewrite your letter and be more specific and provide more detail, then we will do another search. And the whole situation is, I've even gotten calls, and the NSA. I went to a congressional office, and I went to Senator Domenici's office, and I requested specific information. and I had some documents to back me up on what I was requesting. And it dealt specifically with information the NSA had. They still have it. It's still classified, dealing with UFOs. And they can go ahead and say they don't have it from now till hell freezes over. And they do have it. They went back to Senator Domenici's office, and they told Senator Domenici's office that they could not respond to that letter as written, that it dealt with matters of national security concern. So I got a call from one of his aides, and he stated, well, if you'll rewrite the letter. I said, oh, I'll be more than happy to rewrite it. Just have them tell me what it is they want me to take out of my letter and not to ask for. Well, you know, they wasn't born yesterday. They pretty much know what I'd have done, and I'll tell you right now what I'd have done. I would have specifically have asked for that information they want me to take out, which I already knew what it was.
Uh-huh.
But they would not put that in writing. They would only do it in a phone call. Even the senator's office would not put it in writing when I asked. I got a letter from a senator, which he is no longer in office, and I'm going to post that letter, where they went to a chairman of a committee and asked for a congressional hearing on Roswell. Well, I believe that that senator that they asked to go ahead and hold that hearing knows something about UFOs. Barry Goldwater did.
Yes.
Oh. Barry Goldwater is briefed on what happened here at Roswell. There's a letter where he talks to someone, an internal letter, telling them that Bill Moore's book isn't exactly totally correct. They missed a whole lot. But then again, you got to remember who Bill Moore, when he wrote the book, was dealing with. He was dealing with those agents that were actively involved with the officially sanctioned deception program to cover up the real events here at Roswell while trying to convince the UFO community that they were trying to be helpful and even going to be releasing the releasing films dealing with what actually happened here in Roswell and of the landing there at Holloman Air Force Base. And that landing did take place April 25th, 1964. And they knew it was going to happen. They knew it was going to land. Yes, they scrambled two fighters because only those that had a need to know knew. The people who went there and was doing the filming wasn't their film crews that normally are sent out from White Sands. These people were from the Air Force's special security office. They tie in and dealt directly with the NSA. The NSA has had problems like with the RB-47s because back in the day we would use RB-47s, reconnaissance aircraft, that electronic gathering aircraft that used electronic instruments to take readings on various aircraft, things of this sort, ELINT, electronic intelligence, and it's known as ELINT within the field. These people in the RB-47s, we had over 30 incidences between 1955 and 1957. Lacey 17 is well known. That was the July 17, 1957 incident involving an RB-47 across three states here in the United States that tracked a UFO. They saw it. They went ahead and picked up on it on radar. Yet there was no case in the UFO files in Blue Book concerning that incident. Later on, they found a couple pieces of paper that dealt with it that Blue Book had.
And
but
what about
the
Holloman landing? Tell us a little bit more about that, since they expected it. And there was a landing there, and they had interaction with the pilots of that craft?
Oh, absolutely. There's
what
at least 400 feet of film.
Oh,
what
and
type of beat?
It dealt with a craft coming in that they knew was going to land there. They have the Blue Air Force sedans that go out there, meet it when it comes in and lands. Air Force officer goes out there. You won't see any people in, like, civilian clothes that are out there. They're just Air Force blue vehicles, Air Force, U.S. Air Force on the side of both the passenger and driver's side doors.
Of this whole event? I mean, they came with a purpose. They were not just sightseeing. They were here to meet with people in the military. Why?
Actually, they were here to explain. It's part of the Cold War scenario. They were here to explain the necessity of coming in over the polar regions of our planet in order to avoid bad things happening. But they also needed to make it clear to them that a lot of times they would cloak themselves, but sometimes they would not cloak themselves. Since when they come over the northern region of our planet, these can be identified as incoming missiles or bombers from the Soviet Union. Therefore,
so they didn't want to be mistaken for an aggressive act of war from another country. Okay, I understand.
And they wanted them to know that this would happen. So since we were foolish enough to want to go ahead and launch missiles, thinking that that was the case, and launch a counterstrike, that we needed to make sure that it wasn't just them. So it was to go ahead and to negotiate ways to understand when these things were going to happen. And that was the whole intent of the meeting.
Wow.
Now, were these gray?
I'm sorry?
Were they one of the gray ETs, one of them?
No, these were about 5 foot tall. They had red jumpsuits.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like an upside-down triangle with, for lack of a better term, I'm going to say like a dragon going through that triangle.
Uh-huh.
But they were very humanoid, very human-looking, with the exception that their eyes were more like cat eyes.
Oh, I see. Huh.
Only one went with the officer that was a field grade officer in one of the stands. The other two stood on the outside of the craft. The film ends with the two staff cars driving off once the leader, which I would assume would be a delegate that was sent from their home planet, got in and they drove off. The film goes ahead, pans as they drive off, goes back to the craft, and has the little ramp where it comes down from the craft out of nowhere, and the two entities standing there as though standing guard. And that's the way the film ends.
My goodness.
There's a few human-looking ETs, different races here on Earth, isn't
there? Oh, yeah. Well, there's some that live right among us. You know, they could be your next door neighbor and you wouldn't know.
That is a mind-boggling.
I might know, though.
You probably would, Becky.
Yeah.
Well,
you have that X-ray vision, so I think you would know.
Yeah, I tell you, it's like a spiritual connection. That's why they speak about spirit, because if that's heightened and more, you're more aware of it in your very being and in your life, it almost like is a magnet. It just connects to an ET if it's around. I'm not kidding you. And that's how it's like a sensed feeling.
That's
how it is, at least with me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it's just like I was doing a film shoot here, and there was a gentleman here that was a scientist. And I make it a point never doing names, because it's up to them, you know, if they want to. But this person was here, and I happened to have a piece of something I wasn't supposed to have.
Uh-oh.
And they went ahead, was doing the film shoot, and while they were doing the film shoot, I never brought it out. But then it was like, and you probably know how this happens, Becky, But I was told this one person had an experience and needs a little validation.
Oh,
so after
yeah,
they put the cameras
feeling.
Up where I knew they could not go ahead and
good.
Get them out and shoot what I had,
mm-hmm.
I called him over to the side and I said, I think you might want to see this, but don't mention it to any of the others. So I showed it, and that person knew it wasn't of this world, knew there was something strange about what I was showing him.
That's right, the connection. Mm-hmm.
And all I could do was tell him, look, you had an experience, and you needed to see this, and I can't tell you why. But then
it's
I immediately...
spiritual. Yeah.
What's that?
It's the spiritual, it's like an emotional, spiritual thing, and when people have had experiences, it stays with them. It's almost like a spiritual imprint in you, and then you connect with anything that's connected with them, whether it be a piece of something or being around or even sometimes another person that has had an experience like you have. You know, it's a connection that's there, and it's unexplainable, but that's what happens.
Well,
oh,
not
yes.
only that, Becky, but the other thing that I'm hearing is that when, Clifford, when you showed this person what you had, that person all of a sudden could be very grounded about, yep, this did happen to me, and here is, again, some piece of matter that is going to help me accept this experience as real.
Confirmation, yes.
Right.
Confirmation. Yeah.
Well, several months later, he called to talk to me. And he essentially let me know that something did happen.
Oh, good.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And he needed to. Mm-hmm.
And the film crew, because he immediately, where'd you get that? What is that? And they started, what are you talking about? I said, oh, we're not talking about nothing.
Yes. Stay safe. Jeez.
Now, Clifford, there was a time when you were very much, and we talked about this right before the last break, so I want to bring us full circle back to what you began to explain to us. There was a time when you were involved in the clandestine operations, and then you were kind of helping them, and the poor UFO abductees were on the other side of that. But then something happened. That made you change your mind. So I just want to set that up for you, and then maybe you can just tell us the details.
That was the Benowitz case.
Right. Okay. Tell us about that.
And actually, that was one of the cases that got me assigned here to Roswell. And, of course, with the Roswell incident starting to come to play because of Bill Moore's book, they were hoping I'd play ball. Well, when I got here... And I knew about Paul Benowitz before, but never made any contact with him. When I got here, I started to do more research on his case because it was obvious I was going to be involved in that.
And tell us a little bit about that case. What did it entail?
Well, Paul Benowitz started, and he believed everything he was saying. He was an honest person. And a lot of what he was saying was real. A lot of the film footage he took was real. A lot of the photographs he took was real, which was why it was necessary to try to go ahead and break him and discredit his story.
Okay.
That's the key. That's what prompted me to publish those documents that I had on my Facebook page. But
so you seen enough
was
enough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I told him we have no right to do this.
Right.
And, you know, some of the people were, you know, being gleeful on how they were manipulating this person. And they even brought some of the people, well-known people in the UFO field, making them think that they were going to, one person was working on a documentary, and they made that person believe that they were going to release a film to them. And that person was well-grounded, down-to-earth, no-nonsense person at the time, that was interested in trying to get to the truth of it. And I'm sure both of you know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of our female researchers, but was trying to get to the bottom. And, of course, being promised by a government agent, and I don't know whether this person had contact with the other one from Air Force Intelligence, but these were the two people that was either officially or unofficially sowing in the seeds of disinformation so at a later date could go ahead and discredit the events that surrounded the Dulce area, the Dulce underground base, the Dulce events that was going on. In reality, there at Dulce, there was a crash. And I didn't know this at the time, but there really was a crash. And I believe that there was another craft because there's a photograph with a Jeep. And the person by that Jeep is a lieutenant colonel in the United States Air Force. And this dark craft, this dark triangular craft is flying above them. That is a legitimate photograph.
Oh, my.
Excuse me. There's different types of crafts out there, too, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. It's like we have different type of aircraft.
Right.
Anybody, you know, everybody goes ahead. And, you know, flying saucers was a term we came up with.
Right.
But right here, there was me, and there was Harry Chappelle, and there was Paul Collins. We were all three security. We were standing out in front of the guard building there at Roswell Job Corps, and we looked to the north towards town, and there in the sky was a triangular-shaped object that we couldn't make out the object itself, but we could go ahead and see the flames coming out from underneath of it forming. It would be three aircraft carriers on either side of the triangle.
Oh, my goodness.
And what shocked me, there were not a whole lot of reports. There were no reports. It didn't make the news or nothing. But we saw it, and others should see it. Well, I started to walk out from underneath the cover area of our building, and I kept looking, and I muttered to myself, "What is that?" And Paul said, well, it must be a UFO.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
I said, yes. And at some point, he asked me, well, don't you know? I said, no, I don't know what it is. And he said, then it must be a UFO like that. But, you know, the whole situation is I thought there'd be newspaper reports, all of that. But there was an exercise going on here in Roswell at the time, and they had Tent City over at the Air Force Base and all that. And what happened was they put it out because some of their Air Force people saw it because they came to the mall and they were out there talking, and I was out there. And one of the air police says, yeah, it must be over beyond where the mall is, way out there in that open area where they were dropping those flares the other night. And one of the other security officers that was with me said, yeah, we had some security officers that saw that. And I turned to him real quick. I said, keep quiet. And I said, so they were flares, huh? I said, yeah, well, there was this Air Force sergeant and this one female security police officer was there, went over and came over to where I was, and I said, you know, I believe in UFOs, and I don't believe those were flares. They looked at one another kind of strange, and they looked back at me, and the Air Force sergeant and the security police officer both agreed, said, yeah, we found it kind of hard believing they were flares being dropped in a huge triangle formation. And the female was smart because she immediately said, with the flares, you might get like a bright orange flame and all this. What you don't get is at the top, it's a blue and orangish towards the bottom of the flame.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, ma'am, you got that right. And,
they knew.
Oh, yeah.
They knew.
And they went ahead and said, but when you're told they're flares by your superiors, they're flares. I said, it's okay, kids. I said, I'm retired Army. And I was one of the security officers that saw that triangle the other night. And I know they weren't flares. The female security police officer went ahead and stated, yes, sir, we know it too. And, you know, we let it drop right there.
Yes.
But
I wanted to ask you, which really intrigued me, your story about the smoke shack with Stoney, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was amazing, because I want to tell you first, one time in one of my experiences, I seen this being that was all in white and had huge wings, and the being stayed absolutely silent. So when I read this, I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? So could you tell us this story here? This was pretty amazing, Club.
That's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, out there at Roswell Job Corps, the kids saw some what they called shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, almost all the security officers heard about it, but, you know, they took it at face value. Well, I already knew, and I told the kids, you know, I believe you're seeing something. I don't know what, but, you know, I'll keep my eyes out. And a couple of the other security officers, they felt the same way. But we were sitting there in the guard shack one night,
mm-hmm.
and it was in front of the male dorm. Well, right behind us, facing towards the west, was the old rec hall. Behind that was a vacant building. And I looked, and I saw this dark figure that ran over towards the vacant building. And, of course, I had these kids at there, and among the kids that were there, there were two female students that I don't want to name.
Uh-huh.
But one of them went ahead and stated, you saw that, didn't you, Stoney? And I said, yeah, young, and I saw it. And I started to get up, and where are you going? I said, I got to go find out who's back there. And said, no, don't do that. That may make me good. You could get hurt.
Could be dangerous.
I'll be okay.
Yeah.
So I got up, but she made me tell what I saw, so she knew that I saw what they saw. But all my kids just sat there. So I went on to the back, and when I got back there, I ran into this entity, and it was roughly 10 foot tall.
Oh, my goodness.
And
wow.
There was a conversation, and the kids picked up on it. If you read the statement that the young lady felt that she needed to write.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it, yes.
She went ahead and wrote the statement. And when I went back there, this wasn't necessarily one of the good entities, because I went back there and I essentially said, you're scaring these kids and this needs to stop. And the response was, we could kill you. And that wasn't the first time I got a response like that. But when the young lady said that there were about 20 kids that looked and saw, and I looked and saw them, I told them, everything's okay. Just go on around back to the smoke shack and stay there.
Mm-hmm.
They could see that there was some type of dialogue going on. And she said when she turned back, it looked like I had angel wings. Well, I didn't have angel wings, but I had
the
a
angel
guardian,
was with
put
you.
It that way.
Yeah.
And this entity wasn't going to do anything to me.
Right.
But after that, the entity wasn't seen no more.
Well, that's good. That was really good.
Yeah.
What about
you took a stand for the safety?
What's that?
You took a stand for the safety, which is tremendous.
Safety, right.
you know, with all of this, I mean, again, I just want to keep bringing out that where you had a change of heart, you really started to make a big change in how you were going to be with people who were expressing that they had seen UFOs, you were going to come out and tell the truth about this. I mean, that's massive. That's huge. That's a huge
yes.
turnaround from where you
brave
were.
Brave, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, very brave.
Yeah, but sometimes it's very lonely.
Yes,
I mean,
it can be, right.
You isolate yourself from the world. And a lot of people, I hear it all the time, I'm making all kinds of money. No, I'm not. Anybody can come here and visit me. I never shut my door to anyone. And I always try to share when they come here the documents I have on CDs, DVDs. I'll go ahead and try to make copies for them because I want this information to get out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you decide to come out, there's a price to pay. And, you know, people will listen to high-ranking officers who have something to say. What they don't realize is, good example, the Battle of the Bulge. Battle of the Bulge was the last stance of the German military during the Second World War. If they succeeded, then the outcome of the Second World War would have been different. They didn't succeed. And the reason they were not successful wasn't because of the high-ranking officers that were involved. Sure, they played a role in pushing them back. But you had to have troops out there that was willing to hold until a counteroffensive could be marshaled and sent there to relieve the embattled forces in and around Bastogne. The ones that did that weren't officers. It was sergeants who rallied their men and stated, no matter what the power of the German forces are, we will not be moved from our locations. We will defend this position no matter what. And they did. And that bought the time for Patton to go ahead and marshal the forces to bring forward to relieve the forces in and around Bastogne. But
well,
it was the NCOs that did that.
That's like the people who, like you, look at you. You've been all through this all the time, all your life. You know it is real. And yet there finally came a time when you can start letting it out and getting it out to the public, no matter what disinformation or what they try to say or do to you, you know what is real. That is like myself. I grew up in this. I know it's real. I don't care what anyone says to me. I still know it's real. You see? Go ahead.
But I have to do it, and it's not for myself. It's for, Becky, it's for people like you.
It's for the world. Yes. It's for the humanity.
People like you who have had these experiences. I have to come out and say, you know what? I stand behind these people. These people have had these experiences. And I know they have had these experiences. I know our government knows.
Mm-hmm.
And our government is wrong by not coming out and telling the truth to what we know.
That's right. That's right. And it's really a shame because we love our country. And we love humanity, and really and truly, we would be like 1,000 bazillion times even higher if the truth was out there and people knew it. And then half these people even have experienced it wouldn't live in fear, live in thoughts of, this is what is going on. I don't know what's going on. This is crazy. Am I okay or this and that? They wouldn't have to even live in this stuff, and it would just raise the bar, even in spirituality. Their spirits would even raise. I'm telling you, I think our government is doing the wrong thing by saying that, and I don't want to hear they're going to terrify the people because we've had enough years of being conditioned through cartoons, movies, shows, even people talking to know that this stuff is out there, they are real. Just work with us. Tell us the truth and work with us. People will be so happy and probably relieved. You know, 98% of them, there might be a couple percent that can't handle it, but us that can help even them along. You know, it's really time. And, you know, they did say that they won't be held back much longer. The ETs, there's ETs out there that are not going to be held back much longer, you know, to let the world know that they are here. We are here. I know you must know that, especially when you've been involved with the government. You know, they must know they're on borrowed time right now.
Clifford?
Well, we look for what we call extraterrestrial artifacts right here in our solar system. But it's very low key. And, you know, the question is, are they there? Well, I personally believe, yes, they are there. I personally believe that an object that is cataloged as 1991 VG, and that's V as in Victor, G as in Golf, it will make its next closest approach to our planet in 2016. The best NASA can make of it is that it's some booster we overlooked, space debris, that's about 10 meters, which means about a little more than 30 feet in diameter, that we overlooked, which is essentially impossible. We got a glove, we go ahead and track up there in space. We got a screwdriver, we track in space. We even have a couple of screws we track in space. So something 10 meters, we overlooked it? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Or it's a highly unusual asteroid, meaning no other asteroid in all the years that we've been watching asteroids have ever been observed as this one is. The other thing is, if it's an asteroid, it made a course correction at one point to avoid a collision with another asteroid. Highly unusual for asteroids.
Yeah.
What
like
I truly believe, oh, it actually is, young'un, unless it was a controlled maneuver.
Right.
I actually believe in 2016 there's going to be astronomers all over the world looking at this asteroid. And I believe what they are going to find is that it is a extraterrestrial probe that was put out hundreds of years ago to search life out from an advanced civilization. And we are going to finally have that confirmation. The question is, because of the vanity of our scientific community, who would be most threatened by an advanced civilization because it would show how little they know compared to what they believe they know?
Right.
Will they tell us the truth?
That's right. The truth will be out there.
And what an embarrassment, like I said, another embarrassment it will be for the people that have kept it from us all these years and then gone out of their way to discredit people that have had experiences. And it's like you said, Becky, it's just wrong what they've done.
Yes,
and I agree with what you're saying also, that it's not about that they're protecting us from our own fear. We're going to run screaming into the night. Baloney. I mean, if we're going to run screaming into the night, it's because of what the government's doing, not because of some extraterrestrials that are landing happen to be living here. I mean, if they're living here, it doesn't sound like they've been bothering anybody. So, I mean, there are the evil issues that we discussed previously and how some things can go awry. But at the same time, I mean, it is such a mistake to keep the truth from the people in this regard.
Absolutely. And I hear from them to this very day. I mean, I even receive messages, and I speak it in the language that they taught me from childhood. I give those, and I hear from them, and I've told you and talked with you, Patricia, you know I hear from them.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've even got different things that you yourself have taken pictures when they've been present and different things, so I mean, it's not like they're gone. They're here. They're here.
Definitely here. And, you know, one of the things that I was wondering also, Clifford, in this whole discussion, is do you think that there are plans or there's processes in place where they will make more contact with us rather than the government?
Actually, I think that's going on already.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I state that is, like, Becky, Becky's family, myself, and others who they have chosen to make contact with. You know, maybe it's now for us to go out and tell that we have visitors here. And, of course, you know, the scientific community doesn't know how the world as a whole is going to react to the knowledge of us making radio contact with an advanced civilization, let alone having to tell the world they're here, they've been amongst us for millennia, and they're not hostile. We have nothing to fear. We have no idea how the world's going to react that way. That message is broke.
That's right. And
I think,
by the way,
our visitors worry about that too.
Yes,
they
really
want us to know that they are just as mortal as we are. They're not gods, but they have a vested interest in us. And our curiosity makes it to where we have a vested interest in them. We have a lot to learn.
And they don't want to hurt. Right.
Oh, no, they really don't.
No, they don't want to hurt us.
A lot of times with the abductions, you get pulled out of bed in the middle of the night, and there's no explanation for it. That's scary.
Yeah.
So you identify that as a hostile act. No one asks you. But we do the same right here. We don't ask animals that we believe are endangered species. We want to figure out how to protect them and ensure the continuation of that species.
Right.
So we conduct scientific experiments. We make no effort to try to explain it to them because we know we don't have the means to where they could understand. And I assure you that deer that we go ahead and shoot and tranquilize and go out and put a tracking device on it is scared to death while all this is going on because it has no idea what our intentions are. But now with us, when we find ourselves in a situation where we are a party to an interaction with our visitors, I suggest try to overcome your fear. Ask questions. You might be surprised at the answers you get.
That's good advice.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Very good advice. And we have a caller on the line who wants to ask you a question about Nibiru and Earth as a spaceship. So let me just grab this call. We've had a lot of problems on the board tonight with calls being dropped, but it looks like we may be able to bring this gentleman on. JR, is that your name?
Correct. My name's Junior.
Hi. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Clifford?
Yeah. So after doing some extensive research and hearing about Comet Ison and Planet Nibiru and going through the law of time and the 819-day count and just kind of beginning to comprehend things, there's things surfacing in regards to Planet Nibiru being like a spaceship, and so we're elevating to a state of where we could navigate our planet like this. Is there anything you could share in regards to that?
I'm not sure whether we're ever going to navigate our planet that way, but is it possible? Yes, it is. We have found we have actually found planets, thanks to Kepler and some of our other satellites that are up there, that aren't going around any star system. They're nomads, so to speak. And we don't know fully what to make of this right now, so the research is still open.
Is it possible to mention some of those so that we can document them and find them ourselves as amateur astrologists?
Well, actually, you go on the NASA website, and they will bring up some of those go on the Kebler site.
Wonderful.
That site right there will give you a listing of those nomad planets that we have found. But they are out there.
The other question I had was, we've got this potential president candidate coming out. I think his name's Andrew Basagio, who had mentioned that he was part of a NASA program and that him and Obama were part of this time travel program. Have you any knowledge of this?
Well, I was hoping Nolan would ask about time travel, but since it came up, I'm going to tell you what our visitors would tell, and it involves a very personal story. I had a son killed in August of 1995. Knowing our visitors had the ability to go both forward and backwards in time, I asked to go back 15 minutes before the accident. What I learned from asking that question was that which we call God in his infinite wisdom, knowing our greed, put a barrier there where we cannot go into the future and interact or go back into the past and interact. We can go back as observers and we can go forward as observers. But there cannot be any interaction. Any changes we make has to be made in that little point of time we call the present, our here and now. And I got the opportunity to have that demonstrated to me. This is my opinion. This is what I've been told. Others may know something else, but me personally, because I don't want to lie to anybody about what I personally believe, and in many cases what I personally know, I am familiar with the story. I know a guy that's in prison right now who was getting involved with some of this stuff, and he did have mental issues. But some of these people initially wanted to talk to him, but after they found out, they dropped it. But I'm familiar with the people saying that they went ahead in time. I'm familiar with people saying that they built the craft that crashed here in Roswell in the year 2035. No, it didn't happen. If you go back in time, and for lack of a better term, they don't call it this, but I have to use the terms that I can use to identify in our reality. They call it like a space-time continuum. It's like the trunk of the tree. If you go back and you change something in the past, it's like you a lightning bolt. Then it starts another branch, a parallel universe, in which anything and everything that would have occurred as a result of that which you changed from the past would have occurred. Another parallel universe forms. And you could have many branches of the tree if we could go back and do that. The end result is there might be 2, 3, or 4 of you existing in various parallel universes. Our entities don't know the answer to this, but they suggest if you existed in more than one reality, more than one space-time reality, would those many facets of you within those parallel universes, or multiverses, they put it, would you share the same soul? But they make it quite clear you cannot go back and change the past. If you do change the past, then you cannot, it has no bearing on your present, because what is our past is our past. But you can go back as an observer. And when I say you have a situation where you go back as an observer, a lot of people who we say are sensitive, like if you've ever been in a room and you feel like, you know you're by yourself, but you feel like there's someone or something else here, that very well could be somebody observing you from the future. And that's my take on it. But I have to put my take on it that way because I don't want to mislead you and say something that I truly don't believe. Time travel, yes. And as a matter of fact, our visitors, when they come here, they actually do a form of time traveling. If you have an interstellar spacecraft, you have a time machine. What I always like to use is, because I know it's reality here, some of our visitors come from a star system. It's 100 light years from planet Earth. In real time, it takes them an hour and 40 minutes to get here. Now, when they get here and they look back on their planet, they actually see that planet 100 years back in time as to what they currently are now in real time. But that's my take on it. I hope that answered your question somewhat.
Very much so. I appreciate you elaborating for us. And if there's anybody else that'd like to ask you some questions, I'd like to hear a couple more minutes, and maybe I can come up with some other stuff to ask you.
Yeah, well,
thank you, JR,
for your
thank
call.
You.
Yeah, we'll be sure to be having Clifford back, because I feel like we've just started to scratch the surface here. There's so much.
Can I interject something here about something I'm going to be doing in April?
Sure, please go ahead. Thanks, JR, and just keep listening. Go ahead.
And, like, I believe it was you, Becky, I told that I have some scientific papers that I'd love to publish because people don't even know these things exist that deal with time travel and also deal with interstellar travel that our space visitors might be using.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're not in the UFO field, but they're in academia circles that have been given as serious papers in various scientific settings around the world. Anyhow, in from April the 26th to April the 27th, here in Roswell, they're going to be giving paths to contact where people who have been involved with UFOs and have had contact, where they're going to be talking about it. I'm going to be hosting that.
Wow.
And that's
here
terrific. In Roswell.
Yeah.
But like I told you earlier, what I want to do, I am going to try to make a DVD because there's a lot of documentation that I'm going to have there for people who come to this that as a gift from me to them, I want to give them a copy of that if they're here. And I think that they need to see the science because then I don't sound crazy when I talk about certain things I talk about. And like I say, there are papers that have been presented by real scientists, some of them going out on a limb suggesting that we are being visited by space beings. And that's taboo because, you know, there's repercussions from your scientific community and your colleagues for even suggesting
that's a
such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to send me an email to with an address. I can send you a copy of that.
Thank you.
And
that's wonderful.
I think you need to see this because the whole situation is that the documents will refer to events that occur that we would anticipate, like casually, like going back in time, killing your grandparents where you never will exist. It explains this in scientific terms. Forget the math. Read the paper, though. And it's
that's
easy
amazing.
To understand. And like I say, this will be here in Roswell from April 25th to April 27th. And I hope a lot of your listeners make it out here. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I make copies so I can give each person there or each family at least one copy. And then they can share it with others that they know.
That is fantastic.
Yes. How generous. And you know what, Clifford, if you could make sure to send us an email on the details of that, we'll include it in our newsletter so that we send out every week so that people will have that. They can put it right on their calendar, make arrangements, travel arrangements to get there, and it would be a great event to attend, that's for sure.
And something else I'd like to point out also, and Becky, if I'm incorrect in this, please correct me.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm one of one voice out there talking and saying these things are reality that are happening, and you need to at least tell your family about these events that have taken place in your life.
Yes.
And what I'm trying to do is get the message out that it's okay, you're not alone. There are thousands of other people who have had experiences. And that's me, one voice. But I would suggest the really true, sincere people out there, like Becky, her mother, they're trying to get this information out for the very same reason I'm doing it, to let others who have had experiences know that, you know, it's okay. You're not alone.
That's right.
You're not crazy.
That's
These
right.
These events happen.
That's
it's
right.
So
no
important.
Matter what someone else says. Yeah.
That's right. And Clifford, you know, we have to thank you for what you are doing, because it's one thing when you are an abductee and you've been experiencing this once, twice, or 50 times, but it's another thing entirely when you are who you are. You are a former sergeant in our military service, and you have seen all of this from the inside. You can provide us all with facts and figures and events and things that have gone on behind closed doors, and it really helps us. It really helps us to understand and to feel that we do all need to band together and speak out about this. But that's all thanks to you.
Yes, and
thank
what
you,
is
ma'am,
going
but,
on?
With me, I'm a scared little man, and I pray to God each and every night that he gives me the courage and the wisdom to always do the right thing and put the needs of others ahead of myself and my needs. And that's where
Well,
I'm
you're
at
doing
now.
That. You're absolutely doing that. And remember, fear not, for I am with thee. Remember.
Well, I always remember that. And thank you for saying that, actually.
Yes. I live by that. I live by that. And, that you know, as I grew up in this, and you've seen, as you get older and older, you see, like, you know, people make fun of it, or people say it's not true, or the government's trying to pull this and pull that. You know, that's why a lot of people, you're right, they don't go out and speak about their experience, because they have to put up with all of this. But the thing is, like I said, I know it's real, so I'm living it, and that's just the way it's going to be. There is no other way. There is no other way. That is how
Absolutely.
It is. Yes. And you just have to let people know. They can take it from there. They can either say yes, or they can say no. That truly would be their concern. I feel good when I let people know, yes, this is real. And I love it when people like you, Clifford, come on and let people also know, and even let people know what others are doing to stop the information from coming out. That is fantastic, you know, to get that out also. And you are a brave soul, and you're not alone.
Well, thank you.
You're
we're
welcome.
Right with you.
Yes, we are. We got your back, Clifford.
Supernatural Girls has your back now and
That's
forever.
Right.
Count on it.
Appreciate that.
Right.
Now, for anybody who wants to buy Clifford's book, we highly recommend it, and it is called Eyes Only. And you can buy that on Amazon.com. We will be posting in our newsletter the information about the April event. So if you'd like to make a trip out to New Mexico, you will have all the information to book your travel arrangements and go out there and join Clifford and the group that will be participating. I'm sure it's going to be spectacular. So, Clifford, thank you again for just a
yes,
wonderful evening.
You.
And I really mean it. I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface here with you. So I hope
know.
You'll come back and spend another couple of hours on a Saturday night with us.
Anytime, just let me know. And let me say it's been a great pleasure spending time with you wonderful ladies.
Oh,
thank you. We enjoyed your company so much, and we must have you back.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clifford. Thank you for everything. And if everybody will just stay tuned, we're going to have Becky deliver her message from the elders. And then we are going to have another guest next week and the week after, and we will have Clifford back and much more. So stay tuned. And Becky, do you have your message ready?
I sure do. This message is for Grace. Remember your dreams. We are connecting with you. Your answer is within its essence. Nyoyasodo tokriyamba ha ikwahaniniana siatarukushoati neande kesikimiata a shorenimiti akurosa. Grace, we are with you. There's your message, Grace. What a beautiful message. They're connecting with her in her dreams. That is so beautiful.
That's
there you
fantastic.
Go, Grace. Yes.
Yeah, and Grace, feel free to reach out to Becky at BeckyAndreasen@AOL.com. Becky's address is on the Supernatural Girls website. You can feel free to reach out to her if you feel that message was meant for you. If you have any other questions, contact Becky. And if you want to be a part of our Dreaming Prosperity group, feel free to send us an email, reserve your space, and we will begin that journey on January 28th. That's coming up soon. So, everybody,
yes.
Thank you so much for joining us on this exciting show. It's been absolutely a pleasure to be here and hear the truth from Clifford Stone, a very brave man.
Wonderful. It was just wonderful. Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you, Becky.
Yes.
Take care, everybody.
Good day.
And we will be back next week.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with Supernatural.